Greetings, the automatically deleted husband. Yesterday was rather a marathon, so I'm going to try to do a lot better today because I did actually listen to what I did yesterday and find that I hope it becomes worthwhile in the sense that it will be useful for others, most notably my kids. But because I thought it was substantive enough, I put it on DVD today and it went out in the mail to Jim Cross, because obviously I sent him a card saying that I was doing this, but my assumption is he won't go to the web to look at it. So I sent him a DVD, and my suggestion is I sent the postcard to my wife today that she might want to check into it. Reason being, not because, oh, this is some, but I'm not hiding my plans, what I'm doing. I'm trying to give my evidence from Scripture why I'm doing the things I'm doing. If I'm making a mistake, because it wouldn't be the first time I've made a mistake. Oh, no, it wouldn't be the first time. But anyway, if I'm making a mistake, if we're going, you know, an act of love would be to correct me. But, you know, or if I've said something wrong, it'd be nice to know what I said was wrong. But just to let you know, I do wonder if the mind is going, because Monday I looked at the place where I normally get my hair cut, and they said, oh, closed Sunday and Monday. So I went to the store because they opened it, you know, 8 to 6, I think it was, and closed Sunday, Monday. So Monday morning I went to the store and it was closed, and I couldn't understand, is there a problem here? I had to go anyway because I had to get to the bank, and because of this issue with my debit card number being pilfered. But it wasn't until I was on the way to the bank realized they're closed on Monday. It's Tuesday. And I was thinking it was Tuesday. So the mind is going. The mind is going. But I did make it today, as you see. I got my semi-annual haircut. You know, I used to get it a lot more frequently when my wife did it. My wife, that woman, you know, gorgeous lady. Anyway, she used to cut it for me, and you know, I'm more than willing to have that happen again because I like her. But I did that, and on the way back, and a couple things, because I've seen this so often late, is the magnificent timing that God orchestrates things. It's just fantastic. Because I walked back, I went to Ace Hardware, a place that I go periodically to get things like my air filter for my... And so I got one of those today and another item. And then I started my trek home and crossed the major street, 25th Street. And when I get across, I see just ahead there, like three houses away, a woman going, Miss Lillian. And it's kind of like the excitement she shows. Look, let's talk. That joy. I want to talk to you. It's fantastic. You know, it's nothing like the conversations I have with Chris. Even today, you know, when we talk about the scripture, how to apply things and things of that nature, good, really deep stuff. With Miss Lillian, it's not deep at all. But to interact with somebody who's having such joy interacting with you is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And I was constantly thinking about the joy it was. My wife and I, we talk constantly. Just doesn't matter what, we just wanted to talk to each other. I still do. I so much do. But, you know, the nice thing about Miss Lillian, one is I feel loved by her. I feel her desire for my presence. And I feel like she's my mom, you know, because she's old enough to be my mom. Which is, there are very few women walking the earth who can say that. And she's one of the few, and she shows it as if I'm one of her kids, which I find a delight. But one other thing that I found, I was thinking about, you know, there was the earthquake in Turkey and Syria. And well over 10,000 people have died. Two things. One is every day, every 2 hours or so, well over 10,000 people die. We don't hear about them. Roughly every couple hours, 10,000 people die. But this was an event. And somehow it makes those people different. And I really think there's a lot of, you know, psychology here. You know, why those people are not more significant than the other 10,000 that died in the last 2 hours. But they're part of an event, and it makes them stand out. So it's really the event that makes them stand out more than the people. It's something that I'm, you know, I think about, trying to think through, so I put it there to think through. But the other thing I found so fascinating, and I'm unclear on exactly how the timing of this, but a baby was pulled out. Apparently her entire family was wiped out, including the mom. And this is a newborn. I don't know how old, but I just think about that when that person, you know, 20 years from now. Oh yeah, remember that earthquake? I was in the rubble. My whole family died except me, and I was the baby in this pile of rubble. Just, I find that fascinating. You know, just but again, why would that person be more significant than the other thousands upon thousands of babies that are born, you know, today? But anyway, it's an interesting story. But there's a big thing. But, you know, again, one of the things that concerns me is the way the world is changing, because that's the world that my generation is handing to the next generation, to my kids. You know, and one of the things I heard in the news yesterday, day before, obviously I didn't mention because of other things, is the U.S. is seizing Russian assets in order to pass them off to Ukraine. The technical term here is theft. And what's happening, again, it's the emotional thing. Oh, we're supporting Ukraine, and we're getting those dastardly Russians and using their stuff to support Ukraine. Yeah, right. But the reality is, one, you know, very little of it will go there. But the other thing is, what is this debt doing to the credibility of the U.S.? The idea that, oh, let's, you know, I'm a person of modest wealth, extreme wealth, whatever, and I'm in a country besides, you know, the U.S., and I have these assets, and I want to secure those assets. And, you know, my country, well, I'll put some of it here, but I want to have it in other places to secure my assets. The most common destination up to this point has been the United States. People will take assets, invest them somehow in the United States in order to secure their funds. The credibility of that is dropping through the tubes. It's just plummeting. Because if I'm a person, especially a person of significant wealth, and I look, oh, look at what the United States does. They will seize your assets if your country is not on the top 10 list of their allies, or, you know. And so I don't want to be in that situation. So I'm going to go take my money to another country. And this is happening, apparently, in a large scale. And where is a lot of those investments going? It goes to people who come to the U.S. to buy U.S. Treasury bonds. And if somebody doesn't buy the U.S. Treasury bonds, who's buying the debt? You know, the way the economic system works. If no one's buying the debt, one thing you do is you increase the interest rates you're willing to pay in order to get somebody to come and buy your debt, because you'll pay them a higher interest rate, which is going to hurt. But, you know, and also now that the U.S., the debt load of the U.S. is greater than the gross national product. In other words, we have gone past that tripping point that we're not paying off anything. Every year, all money is going into interest, nothing towards principal. We've got a problem. And, you know, some things happened. What you do sometimes, you try to inflate yourself out of this, which is theft, or you do other things in order to bring in some resources. And what is the other things? War. Because that brings in resources and allows you to manipulate things. The war in Ukraine. Problem with the war in Ukraine, apparently there's growing evidence it may come to a sudden end. And apparently that's been showing up in foreign news media. I don't know if it's showing up in domestic news media yet, but apparently a lot of foreign news media is starting to, you know, the more major news media sources are starting to say, we got a problem here in Ukraine. And Russia is winning hands down. So you got to shift the focus. And where's the focus right now? It's shifting to China. That's why the saber rattling. That's why we shoot down balloons. And we don't call it a weather balloon. We call it a spy balloon. Because somehow that gives us justification. I mean, these things have happened over and over again over many years. But why is this one different? We need justification. It's not that this is a unique event. It's just an event that we're going to sensationalize in order to make it an excuse to say, look, those people are bad. Something to come out, nothing new under the sun. And then, of course, we have another thing that happened, I think, yesterday. The OPCW, an organization with such credibility. You know, liars and liars and liars. And, you know, because of the fallacy and how they were exposed as the fraud that they try to proclaim about, or their summary, the management's declaration of the Duma alleged chemical attack, where the people who were there said, no, it didn't happen. And they got rid of those people. And so the management said, oh, yes, it happened. It was terrible. Assad is a bad man because he used chemicals against his own. We have no evidence of it, but all the witnesses said it's complete garbage, but. And now they came out, oh, look, we have more evidence. Their policy is they have a chain of custody policy. And so complete violation of this chain of custody. They said, oh, look, somebody came up with some other evidence that shows there was chlorine. Some sample from somewhere from years ago. Oh, we just found it. So now more evidence that it really happened. It's complete garbage. Absolute garbage. It is just a way to sensationalize, to get people who want to hate, give them fuel. And then, of course, but anyway, these things concern me. I mean, if you can buy these kind of lies, amazing. But the important thing, which goes to what was said yesterday. I talk about shofar leaks. And the example I use on the shofar leaks site is, excuse me, major events, more localized events, and the events that nobody ever hears about. You know, the major events, you know, especially when I talk about the sex trade, I talked about Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and so forth, because that's the thing that's been in recent news over the last few years. You know, that's the major stuff. Then we have the more secondary things that there are ministries that work towards, such as Willoughby Farms here in Cleveland, or Hirsong in Chattanooga, and they're in Florida and Alabama, I think. Some football player or whatever is the sponsor of this. Whoever he is. anyway, so you have groups like that, and I am seeing a lot more conversation about human trafficking, because there's an overlap. There are two different things, but there's an overlap. Because sometimes human trafficking is simply a way to make money or exploit people. Sometimes it's to exploit people sexually. So that's why there's the overlap. But it's also a more gentler term than sex slavery. But obviously, again, that's also the person down the street, which is was part of the focus of the discussion on shofar leaks, because it's one of the examples that the technology would be useful for a person in that situation. For some, again, that's the fighting chance idea. But then there was the other thing, you know, other example of whistleblowers. And again, there's the major stage, there's the minor, the secondary things, you know, which I was in Westar, I would say would be one of these second, a couple million dollars is big, but it's not fantastic. And then there's we're still in $100 a year kind of thing. You know, it's kind of like, we shouldn't do that. And you're still a whistleblower and you could be, you know, you're disfavored because of that. So again, it's that huge spectrum. But then, you know, to give the example, obviously I use, you know, the collateral murder idea, but then to try to apply it to the next case, and I suggested a possible next case is collateral pipeline is the name I gave to it. And I said in the video yesterday, it happened. Well, let's look into that, shall we? Because it did happen. Now, the issue is the whistleblowers are unidentified, because I suggest if they're identified, the likelihood is they're dead. They will be somehow have an accident. I remember one gentleman who exposed something. I forget what it was. And for some reason, he ran his car into a, the side of a bridge and blew up, you know. Why did that happen? And of course, there was the reporter, Michael Hastings, who took his car and ran it into a tree at high speed. That was different. But you know, see, somehow people have accidents. Just, you know, remarkable timing. Oh, you know, Seth Rich with... wow, amazing timing that somebody would rob him and shoot him in the back. Gee, and just because apparently, you know, when he is directly stated to be the whistleblower for the Democratic National Committee to expose the Hillary Clinton email thing, which made her lose the presidency, that wouldn't cause him to die, would it? And I would suggest when anything related to what I call a collateral pipeline, the person who's exposed, they're dead. So it was exposed. But the exposers aren't identified. But the reporter who is exposing it is Seymour Hersh. And there's an issue here. He's 85 years old. And so I think he has the wherewithal to say, what are you going to do? Kill me? You know what I mean? It's not like you're cutting out a long expected lifespan, remaining lifespan. If he was in his 30s, that's a big threat. To threaten an 85-year-old man with death is not as significant as threatening a 30-year-old. But also, he's a man of reputation. He came to the world stage in the 1970s by exposing the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. That was a really big deal. I mean, this was huge, large, and well reported, including in the U.S. And didn't make the U.S. look good at all. He's also apparently the focus, or was one of the focus, I'm not sure on this, in the Abu Ghraib facility that U.S. had where we did torture in Iraq. And that didn't go over well. I remember hearing the one woman who was involved in that. If we didn't do it to them, they'd do it to us. That's a horrible attitude. A really horrible attitude. And see some of the pictures which became, you know, shown about what they did to these people. It was more than just simply embarrassing. So, Seymour Hersh now has exposed, he apparently has multiple contacts, and gave rather detailed information how the Nord Stream pipeline was blown up. And I find the information that's exposed fascinating because the detail is tremendous. You know, one of the things that occurred is that after the events, obviously, oh, look, our pipeline was blown up. We would like to examine this. And Norway, which it was basically in their waters, said, no, you can't do Russia. We'll let the Americans, the Germans, and whatnot, but we're not going to let the Russians look at the evidence. We're going to filter it. Why would that be? Really, why would that be? And then, of course, there's the other thing that was stated fairly quickly. Nord Stream 1 is a pair of pipes. Nord Stream 2 is a pair of pipes. So the combination, there are four pipes. Three of them were successfully blown up. One was not. Russia stated almost immediately thereafter, it looks like one of the four is under pressure and we can pump. Do you want it? And the West said, specifically Germany said, no. It's kind of, oh, allow me to shoot myself in the head. So there was problems here. But the issue is, again, this is a rather large pipe. It's not a little pipe. It's a pipe. It's a pipe that you can, it's not that you could stand in, but you can crawl through. It's a big pipe. And so that, to blow something like that up, is not a firecracker. It is a large amount of explosive material that were necessary to do that. So how was it done? How would you do that? And the issue is it's underwater. Well, you could do it underwater without being seen. If you know, you, it's only, 200 and some feet, 260 feet below the surface. So it's something that an amateur diver couldn't do. You know, I've gone in the ocean or, you know, did some, and, you know, I can go down a little ways, but because, you know, the water pressure and whatnot becomes rather noticeable and you start needing special equipment and things of that nature. So trained divers with the ability and the tools and whatnot could do that. But you have to do it where it's not noticed. So he explained how that was done. Divers went down, put bombs on the pipes, but then there was the issue. Is, you know, when you, one of the things I thought about is the way you can see it is if you look at, a calm water, you can look through it, but when it's agitated or murky, whatnot, you can't see through it, or it's very distorted, and so forth. And so that's kind of a way you can see that. The way I look through, you know, I look out the door and I see trees a couple hundred feet away, and it's kind of like clear as can be. But if that was all water, I wouldn't be able to see that clear at all. You know, in some places around the world where you have very clear water, you would see a reasonable, but most places, no. So it's not a clear. Well, you apply that to the idea of radio waves. Radio waves in water has problems. It's more than just blurred and whatnot. It doesn't work. That's why, because, you know, I learned about this back in the 1970s. When I was in the Navy, actually in the Air Force, but I went to a Navy school for several weeks. I forget how long it was. I went to Mare Island in the San Francisco Bay Area. And when I was there, learned the KW-26, which was a crypto equipment that was used specifically for the Navy. And the unique characteristic about this is there was a single transmitter and multiple receivers, because the transmitter was, you know, here in the, you know, big machine somewhere in the U.S. The receivers were, well, one of them was at March Air Force, or actually two, we had a pair, at March Air Force Base in California. But the others are submarines and, of course, ships. But the issue is, you're a submarine, and when you're below the water, you're not getting radio waves. It's just not, it's not there. You'll find that a lot of times they will bring an antenna. You know, the submarine stays below the ground, below the water line, and they pop an antenna up above the water line in order to do some. Sometimes it's just receive only. Sometimes it's bidirectional. Because you want to only receive only if you're not trying to, if you want to make sure you're not giving away your position. So what you could do is you could say, well, I'm traveling around here, there, or the or elsewhere, and normally all I want to do is periodically go up and see if they have, if somebody wants to tell me something. If they need a response, well, then I'll respond. If they don't need a response, I am not going to broadcast anything because I don't want to give away my position. And those are the techniques that were used. But the issue is, this is, you know, the crypto equipment. And the crypto equipment requires synchronization. So one of the ways to synchronize is that you start bidirectional communications. Well, that's out. You don't want bidirectional. You're just receiving data only. So I can't do the bidirectional synchronization. I have to synchronize against something else. So what I synchronize against? The clock, you know, the time of day. And so that's what happens at a certain time of day, basically, typically, midnight, Greenwich time or whatever. You start a new set, new key for the day, because the keys were changed every day. You start a new key, and the key sequence that is generated by the crypto equipment runs for basically a 24-hour long sequence. And then you start a new one the following day. And what happens is the receiver has to say, okay, I'm, let's say, 3 hours into it. And now I'm finally getting this signal. And what I have to do is say, all right, let me advance 3 hours into this key sequence and then try to sync up. Because I cannot respond back. I just have to sync up. And the way I sync up is that in that, you know, with that key sequence, it's encrypting the data. And then if I attempt to decrypt it and I get garbage, well, I'm not sunk. So I, you know, adjust by, you know, going forward or backward a certain amount of time and try again and try again. Oh, until I finally suddenly get clean, you know, clear text with the various synchronization information embedded in it, so I can say, ah, yes, now I'm in sync. And that's the technique that was used. You know, because you have the problem that when you're in the water, you don't do the bidirectional communications, and when I'm in the water, I can't receive anything. So apply that. You're not a submarine, but you're a bomb. How do you receive information? You're not going to put an antenna up. How do you receive information? Because what they wanted to do is issue a command to these bombs to say, okay, now it's time to blow up. Because the first plan they talked about is we'll put the bombs out there and set it to blow up in 48 hours. That's not what they wanted. They wanted to say, all right, on command. Because they wanted to put the bombs out there, and then when they're not around, apparently there was a military exercise, so they could put the bombs there and wouldn't get noticed. Because if they blew up shortly thereafterwards, it's kind of like there's a correlation. So they want to be able to put the bombs there and then literally months later, blow it up. But how do you communicate with something where you can't do the radio waves? One of the things that can go through water fair is sound, and that's where we have the you know you 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 have the sonar devices. That's why you have the, you know, it's done by sound, not by radio waves. You know, it's not radar, but underwater we use sound in order to, determine whether or not, oh, look, there's a, there's an object there. It's not, it doesn't have the precision and so forth. I can't, you know, it gives you rough ideas. Although, you know, a lot of technology has been improved on that, but either way. So you have, you know, the sonar idea, but I'm trying to set a message. I want to send a message to say, okay, you're a bomb. I want you to blow up. And I'm in an environment where there's a whole lot of noise, you know, sound noise, because I'm going to send it a sound message, and I have to send it a message that it will be distinguished between just the normal noise that's in the water. And for someone in the field, there are obvious techniques how to do this. But the thing is, you have to plan to do this. And apparently that's what was planned to do. They put in the bombs to receive sonar messages and say, all right, embedded in these pings is a message. And when it's the right message, I'm going to blow up. And how do you get that message? It's not, hey, you know, I can't be, you know, in the U.S. and send the message. I have to be relatively close to send that sound message, because it is either audio or sub-audio frequency. So you drop sonar buoys. These are common. When I worked at Magnavox for a while, it was fascinating to me because we made them. It's one of the things they made. The planes would fly out over the oceans. They would take this thing, take it out of the case and throw it out the airplane to never see it again, drop it in the water. It would slowly sink and send out information. This is how submarines were tracked, you know, especially during the time of the Soviet Union, how we would try to track their submarines. We'd toss these things out in the water. Good money in this. But, you know, the thing that was fascinating to me is it was a plastic container that we put these things in, and then we shipped them then on the plane. They took it out of the plastic container and tossed it in the water. Those plastic containers were used in a TV series. It was 1980s, I think, one of these outer space series. They had a room with a bunch of these things and these plastic containers, because we had a bunch of them, but they had that look to it, like ooh ah. And every once in a while, I think in the TV series, when an event, fight or what would happen, and you have these things scatter all over the place. Anyway, it was kind of like I recognize those, but anyway, but so that's what would happen. You dropped a sonar buoy. Because unlike when you had all the ships, apparently there was the constant plane that would fly in the area, naval plane, doing the normal scheduled flights and whatnot. And if it dropped a sonar buoy out the window or out the door, it wouldn't be noticed. And apparently that's what happened. Dropped a sonar buoy in the water near the pipeline where the explosives were, it would send out the signal, and the bombs would have the electronics on there to say, oh, I hear the message, and it's time to blow up. And three of the four did. But the thing that's so fascinating, it's been all explained. And the explanation, including what issues were involved, why it can't be done by simply flipping a switch, and all these kind of things, the evidence was set there in place. And it's kind of like, of course, this makes perfect sense. And it is a very, very plausible scenario. And I find this fascinating. Seymour Hersh has the credibility And he exposed it yesterday. And as a matter of fact, the copy of his article happens to be on Kozlowski.org.
Wow.
Why would that be? You probably won't find it on CNN, because apparently, from what I've seen thus far, the U.S. news media is trying to ignore this. Because who does it make it look bad? The U.S. You know, because at the time the Nord Stream pipeline blew up, one news media after another and all the various major players, oh, Russia did it, Russia did it, Russia did it. I mean, that makes, even back then, made no sense. Why would Russia blow up their own pipeline? It just made no sense. Still doesn't make any sense. The U.S. doing it made a whole lot of sense. You know, it's the cui bono. Who benefits? Russia didn't benefit. The U.S. did. And what does it do? It helps keep Germany specifically in submission to the U.S. That was the objective. This is not child's play. This is a really high-stakes game. And suddenly, a rational explanation with some evidence is shown. This is what happened after however many months ago. This happened, in September or whatever. And now we have solid evidence. This is how it happened. I have links to two things. One is the article. I have the link to the article, my copy, on Kozlowski.org, plus the link to Seymour Hersh's original article on his website. He has a Substack page. I have another copy, and it just happens to be a copy on my site. But I have, I think I put the link to, but it's because for some reason, RT's back on YouTube for some other stuff, which kind of surprised me. But anyway, it's RT's article. And the woman who does that gives you a whole long scenario and I think explains it really well. And because it's not only what Seymour Hersh did, but it gave some of the, you know, the backstory, which I think is very helpful. So I have both those there. This is a big deal. And there's going to be repercussions. It probably will not be noticed that much domestically. But this is a big deal. This is a really, really big deal. You know, and as I've described before, I would suggest this is the 9/11 for Germany without the pyrotechnics. Because more than likely, they had the good fortune of having a mild winter. But it's costing them dearly. And perhaps, indeed, some lives were lost because of this. Economically. Because what it does is increase their cost of energy. And because they've tried to shut down coal and nuclear, the cost of energy has skyrocketed. And a whole lot of the energy-dependent businesses are leaving the country. It's called the deindustrialization of Europe, or in Germany in particular. Who's the benefactor of that? Some of it is the U.S., because some of those industries are coming here because of cheap energy costs. Some of them say, no, we're not going to go there either because U.S. doesn't play fair. So there is a huge dynamic happening here. Huge dynamic happening here. And what's going to happen? I don't know. But there are at least, my assumption is, because apparently it is multiple. So let's say there's at least two people who've exposed this information to Seymour Hersh. My assumption is, obviously, because he's been in the business for a whole long time, he knows how to protect these people. And considering the level this was done, these people probably understand that they're not playing tiddlywinks. They're playing life and death. So a lot of the things I'm sure were done to protect these people. And so it's reasonably likely they'll survive. If they are caught, it's also reasonably likely you'll never hear them identified. They'll just, oh, well, just some Joe Schmo, whoever it is, died somehow. That's probably the more likely scenario. It won't be, oh, here's the person who's leaked this, and oh, he suddenly died. No, he'll just suddenly die. And, that would probably be the likelihood. But then, of course, there's that fundamental. That whole idea is the idea of how do you protect that person when they're doing something at the collateral pipeline level, the Jeffrey Epstein level, the pedophile island level, the politically positioned person who has a local community and is exploiting people to the point of financial or sexual exploitation. How do you protect someone there? And how do you protect the guy who's pointing out that people are stealing penny candy from the local factory? You know, different scale. But it's just as big a deal to that person. The solution is called shofar leaks. And I'm going to push forward on that. And I'm going to be a whole lot shorter than yesterday, because yesterday was ridiculous, and I am ridiculous again today. Anyway, the reality is collateral pipeline is real in a different scenario. But the reason to do it, the example now, is on the world stage. Well, the world stage, not the U.S. stage. And this is what I intend to pursue wholeheartedly. I pursued that a good bit today. I got interrupted for well over an hour with Miss Lillian, another high priority event. And of course, I had my haircut. And the grace of God, I didn't have to wait long. These are the things that I do because I'm a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. And I'm not the musician. I'm not the physically adept person. But I'm the person who knows how to do this digital stuff. So I'm going to do it wholeheartedly until I'm stopped. Because it may help somebody. And I have the Lord's grace in my life that He's allowing me to try. And that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to use, as I described yesterday, the exact same technology to pursue reconciliation for myself with others. Number one on the list is a lady I love and adore, who her dad was sent a DVD today that I hope he is willing to spend the time and watch, even though it's going to cost him just over an hour. It would be wonderful if my wife and maybe some of my kids saw it too. It may explain some of the things, but of course they probably will be kept from it because it doesn't make my wife, Jim Cross, and whatnot look well, does it? Especially when you have the husband, the dad, striving to, or the son-in-law, striving to reconcile. And these people don't want to say, well, look, he's striving to reconcile. Obviously, he's a bad man. How do you say that? How do you say that? So instead, you got to cover it up. I need to get to them to understand. I'm going really methodically now. I made some steps today to do some cleanup, to make a really solid delivery of Shofar Nexus. And on top of that is the mechanics for Shofar Leaks. And I'm going to use that mechanics to reconcile relationships. You'd probably be better off having reconciled before this actually happens, if, Lord willing, it does. So I would suggest you either come to the table, let's reconcile beforehand, because it might be even harder to reconcile when I've exposed you publicly. The Paul exposing Peter example, the Galatians 2 example I use. It's going to be harder. But the goal is reconciliation, not revenge. The goal is to be able to have dialogue with my kids as opposed to leaving voicemails. The goal is to be able to embrace them, live life with them. The goal is to reconcile with my wife. Dorothy Jane, my lady, putting a whole lot of effort into this because I love you and I want you back.